Hi, I think is the right way to start one of these videos.
Exactly. Hello.
How's it going? It's been a while, so I'm a little off kilter. I'm like...
It seems like ages.
It has been ages.
Christopher, it's nice to see you.
Things get busy. You as well.
Thank you.
Been a long time. So we're gonna talk some more about, well, technology, I think is the idea.
Technical things and stuff.
Purely technical things and stuff, because we never drift off topic at all.
Ever.
In fact, I'm going to turn around backwards like I'm probably not supposed to do. Windows Server Administration Fundamentals.
Okay, so we've done networking fundamentals.
We have.
We've done security fundamentals.
We have.
Now we're doing Windows Server Administration Fundamentals.
Yes, and while you're going to be an MBA and you're going to be able to see these videos in whatever order you want, the order we're talking about, the order we've recorded and placed them into MBA is kind of the prescribed order for consuming them. So hopefully you've seen networking and security fundamentals. If not, no time like the present.
From what I've noticed, a lot of people have seen networking fundamentals and have appreciated the content.
They have. We've got some good scores on that one, so keep that coming.
I've received some emails that say, hey, you guys are not only odd and funny, I learned something.
It's weird. I haven't seen those emails. Maybe I should inquire more. No, I've seen some as well. So we like the feedback. Keep that coming. You're going to see some contact details for us in a minute. So if you want to send us feedback, feel free. We're all for it.
Okay.
Shall we dive in?
Let us dive in. So as you mentioned, Windows Server Administration Fundamentals, exam prep. So for Microsoft Technology Associate Exam 98366, Windows Server Administration Fundamentals.
Actually, I think, and we should check this, I might have gotten that number wrong now that I think about it. But that's okay. We'll fix it before they download the slide deck for the course.
Okay.
And now they've seen it. Number might be wrong. We'll come back to that.
We'll fix that.
Yeah.
Okay, so one thing to note is Christopher and his glamour shot photography here, and you'll see why I'm mentioning this, as always, why I'm mentioning it. Christopher, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, what do we want to know? Yeah, I just found out we did get the number wrong. Well, this is me in a nutshell. I'm a Microsoft Certified Trainer. I'm a Microsoft Certified Professional, Microsoft Certified MCSE, MCSA, MCITP, all sorts of certs for the last dozen years or 15 years. Currently a Content Project Manager in Microsoft Learning. I plan and design the Microsoft official courseware that we will talk about today as next steps for this course for you to be able to go and take from actual in-person instructors. That's what I do here. The rest of it's all 15 years in IT, background, management, technical, .. Lots of stuff. And then my contact details, if you want to go back to that slide or at the bottom, the email address, christophermba@microsoft.com, and @christophermsl, that's my Twitter. What are those called?
Handles?
I don't know.
That's my Twitter. Crazy kids call that stuff.
That's
these
all
days.
I know. Yeah, I don't know. I will throw in a quick note. It is exam 98365, so we'll make sure to correct that in the slides before you download them. You'll see that 98365 Windows Server Administration Fundamentals.
Okay. Now here's my selfie that I took, like, in my office from my webcam.
It's all right.
But I look like I'm thinking about stuff. That's the one thing I like about this photo is I appear, shall we say, smart or contemplative. I'm thinking about things and stuff.
The work you should be doing.
Exactly. Thomas Willingham, of note, I have a new title.
Yep. In fact, if you guys have seen the previous two videos, you'll notice it's different.
Previously, I was a content developer for remote desktop services. Now, I'm a technical product manager for remote desktop services. Very exciting. So before, I worked with engineering to create and manage the program. Now, I work on the technical product information side of things. So I work on launching. I work on ensuring field readiness, ensuring content for the field, and ensuring content for our consumers so they know what the application's about. I was in a really cool process where the last couple of years I worked on this program, Microsoft Azure Remote App, and then I got the new title, I got the new job right when it came time to launch it. So after working on this application for a couple of years, I got to launch it into the market. It was very cool. It was very cool to kind of see that end-to-end process happen.
It's good timing.
It was excellent timing. My background, I've taught both MCT, so the Microsoft side of things. I've also taught on the Novell side of things. I've been doing this for a while.
A little while.
A while. I think I'm going into, oh, wow, okay, I've rolled into 20. I've rolled into 20 plus years doing this. I've done consulting. I've done courseware development. Now I'm working on the marketing side of things to see, like I said, I've worked in engineering before. Now I get to see the marketing engineering or the marketing business side of things. Really cool.
That's awesome. It's been
really, really interesting. My contact information, gotthomas@microsoft.com, and now gotTwilling. I actually have a Twitter handle now. Periodically, I do the tweet.
I just get emails that say I've got stuff for somebody. I don't even know. I just look at it. Yes, I work in technology. No, I don't use Twitter.
Now that I go to events, I present at TechEd,
nice.
Present at Tech Ready, present at events like that. Twitter handles come in handy. People want to know what you're doing. And actually, shout out, when I was just about ready to do my talk for TechEd to announce Microsoft Azure Remote App, I had somebody say, "You look familiar."
Nice.
I actually got recognized, and when I mentioned networking fundamentals, they're like, "I've seen that, and I appreciated that course."
Wow.
Now, I'm saying that this person appreciated that course. That doesn't mean that you will appreciate this course. I'm just setting expectations.
We're just laboring.
Well, you know, different people, different strokes for different folks.
I like it.
So just because somebody liked the previous course doesn't mean they're going to like this course, but you will. You will like it. It's going to be great information. There's going to be some humor, some laughs, might even be some tears. Don't know. I mean, let's keep the day open. Let's see what happens.
Fair enough. I'm down for that.
Okay, course topics. What are we going to talk about today?
Server. Pretty much sums it up.
Windows Server. We'll talk about a server overview. We'll talk about managing the server.
Well, and in this case, I've got to make a disclaimer early. So the second title says Managing Windows Server 2008 R2. We're currently using the current version of Windows is Server 2012 R2. So technically 2008 R2 is two versions old. We're going to cover material from both for two reasons. One, Server 2008 R2 is what this exam is based on. It hasn't been updated yet for the 2012 series. So what you're going to see, what some of the things I'm going to show you in demo are 2008 R2 specific. But we're going to give you the information for 2012 R2 because you're going to need that in the real world. So we're going to cover both. You may see 2008 R2 referenced from time to time. That's why, so don't freak out and think it's just mistakes. It's there on purpose.
See, once again, we're here to help you pass these tests. And I've received emails, I think you've received emails, that people have said, "Hey, I've watched your video content, I've watched your MVA content, I went and took the test, and I passed." So people have been able to apply the information they're learning in these courses to pass the tests. So managing storage is 3. 4, monitoring and troubleshooting servers. 5, essential services. So what do you need to have running? 6, file and print services. And then finally 7, popular network services and applications. So setting expectations, our target audience. Christopher, who are we trying to reach here?
Everybody. Everybody everywhere.
Exactly.
That's the goal of MVA. That's my metric anyways. This particular course, as it shows on the slide, we're looking for kind of new entrants. The second bullet is actually more appropriate. I should switch these one of these days. Anyone interested in learning more about networking, servers, anybody new to technology who wants to get into technology, from a Windows standpoint in this case, we're talking about Windows Server. So IT help desk staff, really what this comes down to is you may already have a job in IT, you may be doing support, phone support, help desk support, something for an actual organization, but you're looking for what's next? Network administration, systems administration, some sort of next step. That's what this is for. If you're new to technology completely, you're gonna start off again with the networking and security fundamentals courses, move into the operating system fundamentals and Windows Server administration fundamentals, and hopefully start an IT career with this. So that's who we're trying to get to.
And then suggested prerequisites mentions Oh, the supporting material exam, 98349, Windows Operating System Fundamentals.
Yep, and in this case, you could also add to that, we've talked about the networking fundamentals and the security fundamentals.
Correct.
And we'll cover those again. Once we get to the end, you'll see additional next steps. So okay. We will bore you to tears with what to do next or what to have done prior as we go through all of this.
That may be where the tears come in.
It may be. It may be.
Okay, server overview. Are you ready to dive in? Module 1.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
I suppose I'm prepared.
I am prepared also.
I hope so. 15 years in IT, I better be.
Yeah, let us continue. So our objectives. One nice thing to take a look at is these objectives for each module to ensure that you have an understanding of these skills and concepts and the objective domain description. Knowing or feeling good about these skills and concepts, these domain descriptions will help ensure that you're prepared for the test. Mm-hmm. So people want to know, how do I ensure that I'm prepared for the test? Well, review these skills and concepts, review the domain descriptions.
Well, and I'm gonna pull up, while you're talking about that, while you're going through that table, I will pull up the actual exam and show you, because it says objective domain on that last screen, and it says that at the beginning of every single one of them. And not a lot of people know what that means. So what I'm going to pull up here, if we want to switch to my screen, if we can. Yes, we can. Terrific. Skills measured. This is your objective domain. This is what's covered on the exam. Server roles. Active Directory.
So if you have an understanding of these objectives, you will most likely be prepared to take the test.
Yep. So when you see that table that talks about the objective domain descriptions, and the objective domain numbers, that's what it's talking about, where it maps to in this list of skills covered by the exam.
Correct. And then each module will have a specific set of objectives and domains that are covered. So let's take a look at what's covered in this module. Installing Windows Server 2008 R2. Introducing server roles, what are they about? Comparing physical servers and virtual servers. If you've been around the computing industry, you've probably heard desktop virtualization or computer virtualization. That's kind of the next step in computer infrastructure. So we'll talk a little bit about what virtualization is versus physical systems. We'll talk about selecting server hardware, and then finally we'll talk about identifying methods to install Windows Server. So first thing, let's talk about, if you look at the slide here, let's talk about what the function of a server. What does a server do? The most basic definition of a server is a server provides services. That's it. Server provides services. A client requests services. So in this instance, we could have a web server, we could have a browser. The web server hosts web pages. The client has a browser, it requests a web page from the server sends the web page to the client. That's your client server in that environment.
Yep.
If we take a look at the slide here, I have a nice little slide that shows interconnectivity. A network is made up of clients and servers, known as a client-server network. And there are multiple kinds of networks. There's client-server networks. There are also peer-to-peer networks. Mm-hmm. A server provides services. A client requests services. In a client-server network, your servers are typically dedicated service providers. Your clients are typically dedicated service requesters. In a peer-to-peer environment, a system can be either a client or a server. So you have multiple Windows systems running. One system maybe has file shares on it. The other system requests files from that file share. So the server or the system hosting the file shares becomes the server, even if it's running what you would refer to as a client operating system. So in that scenario, even though that system is running a client operating system, it's still functioning as a server.
I want to stick in like a networking fundamentals reference. We need a footnote. This is covered in great depth. We could talk about the different types of networks and topologies and go nuts, but Networking Fundamentals covers that in great detail as well.
Very good. And then a server-based network is the best network for sharing resources and data while providing centralized network security for those resources and data.
And that's the biggest difference, I would say, for this between server-based or client-server and peer-to-peer. Peer-to-peer, you can have the services running on any machine. There's no centralized security. There's no centralized
distributed
management.
Administration. Yeah. Versus in a server, client-server environment, you have a centralized administration
model. Saves you all sorts of time and headache.
It does. It does. And then networks using Windows Server are typically client-server networks. So server roles. Server roles defines what service a server can provide. Things like file services, web services, directory services, remote desktop services, near and dear to my heart.
That's a good plug.
Yep, yep. Application, email, database. These are all services that a server can provide. A server can have more than one role installed at the same time. So it could provide file services and web services simultaneously.
Yep. Hopefully.
Hopefully. Well, that and we'll talk about that in a bit. That kind of depends on the hardware. So does the server have the hardware that's required to run those multiple services? So speaking of hardware, let's talk about selecting server hardware. So when selecting server hardware, you need to keep some things in mind. One is, what kind of performance is it that you need out of this?
Biggest, best, fastest, most monstrous, everything.
Well, what if you're just hosting pictures of cats?
I want those pictures of cats to come up as fast as possible.
What if you like cats but not that much, so you don't want them to come up that quickly? You're okay with them coming up slow?
Throttling.
So
Windows has the tools to manage that.
We can do that.
We have the capacity for as much as we want, but with the tools to keep it exactly where we want it to be.
So performance is one. How fast do you want? What kind of load? Well, that's one thing that we'll talk about is server load. How many services is this server going to handle, and how many client requests does this server need to manage? The second thing that we need is availability. How much or how highly available does a server need to be? Does this server manage life support systems? At which point, if the server is down, that's bad.
That is bad.
Or does the server host pictures of dogs and cats? At which point, if the server's down, maybe that's not so bad.
Probably doesn't matter as much.
Yeah, probably matters less.
Yes.
So performance, availability, and then finally, cost. How much do you want to spend?
Oh, we hate that cost one. Always throws off my bigger, better, faster, more mantra.
Yeah, because then as you get into bigger, better, faster, more, that's more money.
Yeah.
More money, more money, more money. So you really need to balance what are your needs, what are your requirements, and then get hardware that, honestly, if you're thinking of the future, that surpasses those requirements a bit.
Enough, yeah.
You want to plan for the future.
Typical server lifetimes, what, 5 years these days?
Okay, is it that long?
I think so. I mean, it may not be what the manufacturers want you to do, but I think the IT departments I've worked in, we planned on 2 to 3 years for clients and 5 years for servers.
Okay.
2 to 3 and 3 to 5, depending on the system and how critical it was.
And it's that exact kind of treadmill, that hardware treadmill, which is why that the cloud is starting to become so important, because people are putting services in the cloud. And it removes their capital expenditure for hardware on-premise and enables them to move those services to the cloud. Because you think about it, is it part of their purview to be in the data center business? Probably not. So that enables them to offload some of that functionality, move it to the cloud. Or for some corporations, due to security, due to specialized hardware needs, or some other aspect, performance, they might need on-premise data centers. So that might work for them. So again, you need to evaluate what your needs are, what are your requirements, and then build out your system appropriately.
Yep.
So speaking of hardware, here's an actual, on the slide, an actual picture of the hardware. Here's what a motherboard actually looks like.
And we're going to go through components. The next little section, just so we can warn you ahead of time, it's a terminology. We're going to go over what the pieces are, what they do. That's about it.
Okay, so primary subsystems, things like processor, memory, storage, and network. There's a couple things to keep in mind. One, failure of any of these systems will cause a problem. There's also a thing called a bottleneck. And a bottleneck, you think of an area that isn't getting the throughput as the rest of them. Maybe your network card's working great, you have enough memory, your processor's doing fine, but you're doing so many reads and writes that you're having, your storage system is having trouble keeping up. So even though your processor's fast enough, you have enough memory, your network card's good, this becomes your bottleneck. Mm-hmm. Your storage becomes your bottleneck. So you need to evaluate your system again, looking at what is the functionality of this. Is this hosting real-time videos? Is this hosting web? Is this hosting file share of some kind, file services? So looking at those requirements, how do you need to build your system? So we've talked about these primary subsystems. Let's really kind of quickly go into each of these. So your processor, this is your computer's brain, basically. How many calculations or how fast can your computer get stuff done? There are a couple different types of processors, 64-bit and 32-bit. A processor, one thing that people don't realize is a processor can only work on a single process thread at a time. And to enable multiple applications running at the same time, so it appears that these are all running simultaneously, it uses time slicing. So now, think about those really fancy chess players who will play multiple chess games simultaneously. They'll play this game, and then they'll come over here and play this game, and they'll come over here and play this game. Well, to somebody standing back, it appears that they're playing all games simultaneously, but they're focusing on a single game, you know, for a period of time, and then they move to the next game. Mm-hmm. Time slicing works a little bit like that. The processor's attention is divided to Word, Excel, your CRM application, whatever application, or storage I.O., memory process or something. It focuses on that for a very short period of time, churns on that, then goes to the next thing, churns on that. And it slices through these so quickly that everything appears to be running simultaneously.
Yep. And I will say on that slide, there's a note that I have to make. It's got some processor and memory equivalents. 32-bit processors, 4 gigabytes of RAM. That is a hard limit. 32-bit processors can only address 4 gigabytes of RAM maximum. 64-bit processors, it's got 1 terabyte on the slide, and that's what was the norm when this course was created and when this was all built. That has changed. You can actually now, at least in Windows Server 2012 and 2012 R2, address up to 4 terabytes of RAM with a 64-bit processor.
Oh, latest and greatest.
Yep.
Woo! Multi-core processor enables multiple threads and application instructions to be worked on at the same time. That's why multi-cores have become so popular. So now you have a processor with basically multiple cores within that single processor. So processor, the brain, memory is how much can you work on at the same time? How much can you have open on your desk? How many folders can you work on simultaneously? RAM is random access memory. This is a computer's short-term or temporary memory. And what is meant by that is this only holds stuff in memory as long as power is on. The minute power is lost on your system, anything in this memory is lost. So if we go back to your desktop analogy, you have files open on your desktop, your physical desktop at work. You have files open on it. At the end of the day, when you leave, you close all your files and put them back in your file cabinet, which would be your hard drive. Think of if you were to lose power, your desk just gets cleared off. So anything that's in RAM, is lost when power is lost.
Yep.
One of the differences typically between storage such as a hard drive and memory such as RAM is accessing content in RAM is much quicker, is much faster than hard drive storage.
Yes, it is.
It stores, if you look through the list here, it stores data and instructions that the processors access directly. And amazingly enough, if you have more RAM, you can load more stuff in. If you've ever been working on a program and you're going along and all of a sudden your computer kind of chugs for a second, it's entirely possible that whatever you're working on is big enough that the processor actually had to go out to the hard drive, get that back, and pull that into random access memory, pull that into RAM. And having enough RAM is a has a huge impact on overall performance. Typically, more RAM is better. You never go wrong with having more RAM.
That's true. It's a good rule of thumb.
Yep.
That's how I try and do it. I'm like, how much can I cram into whatever box I'm working on? Because it never hurts to have more.
Yeah. In this case, more is definitely better.
Yep.
Storage. So this is, so if we talked about your desktop being RAM, your like physical desk at work being RAM, storage is your file cabinet. So whatever at the end of the day, I take in my file folders, I stick in the file cabinet. When power is lost, power on a hard drive stays on there. So
data on hard drive.
Data, yes. Yeah. Data on the hard drive is static, is permanent when power is off. It mentions that they're half electronic, half mechanical devices that store magnetic fields on platters.
Well, and that even needs revision because I put two pictures on here for a reason. The one on the right,
solid state.
The one on the right is exactly that. It's half electronic, half mechanical. You've got spinning platters. The arms down at the bottom come out and read those platters and write to those platters. Those are magnetic platters. On the left is a solid state drive. That drive does not have moving parts. It is electronic only. It is faster. That's the biggest advantage. They're faster. They're smaller. The drives themselves are actually physically smaller. These days, they're still more expensive. The solid state's just not as cheap as mechanical drives. But yeah, so another little caveat. Not entirely mechanical. What do you got next?
What do I have next? Oh, oops, I changed slides. So you pretty much addressed the storage slides, solid state versus mechanical drives. Yep. Networks. So we've talked about processor. We've talked about RAM. We've talked about the hard drive. So now networking.
And it's gotten more complicated each time. So processors, there are a couple of different brands, a couple of different types. You use them. Memory. You get into a little bit more types. There are different speeds of memory and different types of memory that go with different types of boards, whether it's a server or a client. Disks, yes, we've got solid state. Yes, we've got mechanical. We have some different interfaces that provide different speeds. Those are relatively easy topics. They're relatively little information to learn if you really want to get into the details. Network is not that way. And I thought about that when I made this slide. I was like, can I really just put network in one slide with a couple of bullets? I can, and that's because there are reams of information elsewhere about networking. The networking fundamentals course that we've talked about. There are other courses from some other vendors that talk about networking. It's one of the biggest topics in IT because it's what we do. It's connecting all these things together. So
kind of one of the fundamentals. The server operating system is the operating system that provides services. The network is what enables interconnectivity of all these devices.
So we keep it simple here, but it's very complicated. There's lots of information out there, including the Network Fundamentals course, which is a good start. But welcome to the next 5 to 10 years of your career.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You're always learning something.
Yep.
So the networking card, sometimes called a NIC, Network Interface Card, enables communication with other devices on the network. There are different types of cards. What's shown here is a Ethernet card. But there's also fiber cards, coax cards. That's a bit older. But so there are different types of network cards that provide connectivity to different medias.
Yep. And cards have different features, and the different media has different features, and it's a whole world unto itself. But this is your fourth one. So the point of this is to cover processor, memory, storage, network.
Network.
The big four areas you're going to worry about on any server in any environment.
Correct. And then all of this is gathered on the motherboard.
Ta-da.
So the motherboard is basically where all of this is put on.
Yep.
So it is the controller, or not the controller, but the, well, the motherboard. I mean, that word itself is kind of, it explains the whole thing. It is the main part of the system that, it's the hub.
Yeah.
It is the hub of the system that allows the processor, RAM, network card, video card, any other types of cards that you would want to use that allow those to all intercommunicate.
Yep.
And act together to move your system forward.
And we had a picture of one back at the beginning of this module, so if you want to take a look, you can. I thought about putting the same picture in that slide again, but eh.
Seemed redundant.
Yeah, a little bit.
We're not about redundancy. We're about moving forward and excitement.
It is a nice board, though, the one that picture.
Oh, it was
four processors. I don't know how many slots for memory. I didn't even count.
It was nice.
16, 32 is insane.
It was full of fun and wonderment. Okay, so you have your motherboard, and on your motherboard is the processor, the network card, the video card, RAM, all of those things. When the processor, or when the motherboard first boots up, how does the motherboard know what it has, how it works, and how things talk to each other? That's where the BIOS comes in. The BIOS is the basic input-output system.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a ROM on your system, read-only memory. It is a ROM on your system that as the system boots up, it looks in there and says, hey, what do I have? What is my processor? What is my hard drive type? How much RAM do I have? So as I boot up, oh, here's my processor. Here's how I'm going to boot this up. Here's how much RAM I have that I can address. Here's my video card. So it has all of this information in there that enables boot up and running of this.
At least gets you to the point the operating system can take over, yeah.
Exactly, exactly.
There is a footnote at the bottom of that. So it says read-only memory, and as you said that, I kind of giggled in my head because I'm like, it's called read-only memory, yes.
But you can change it.
It's not often that you would do that. You don't usually need to, but it can be written to. Manufacturers upgrade features, change features. So you may, at some point in your life, in the last line addresses that have to flash the ROM or the BIOS.
Flash.
Yeah, yeah. On your motherboard.
Yep.
And maybe fix problems, create new problems.
Yeah, you're just swapping out one set of problems for a new set of problems.
Well, and I'm tempted to go into the whole firmware flashing conversation that, you know, years of experience, but I won't. It can be done. You'll learn about it when you have to get to that point someday.
Good luck.
Yeah. It's not as bad as it used to be.
No, no. So how does all this run? You need to power it, and that's where the power supply and cases come in. So this is the device that creates power. So if you step back and think about it, the motherboard is a binary system, runs on zeros and ones. Those zeros and ones are electrical in nature, created by power.
Some funny things here. I put a picture that you'll probably never see when it comes to servers. This is a standard computer case power supply. It's a modular one, though. I like the modular ones, so you only plug in the cables you need. But when it comes to servers, you're probably going to be using rack-mounted. Depending on the size of the environment you're in, you're going to be using rack-mounted servers, 1U, 2U, or 4U, which determines how tall the servers are. The power supplies may not look anything like this, but I figured I'd throw a picture of one anyways. Break up the slides a little bit.
And quick piece of knowledge. Those rack-mounted servers look like what? They're thin. They look like...
You're going to have to be more specific.
A pizza box.
I was going to say pizza boxes?
Yeah,
that was my thought, yeah.
Yeah, they look like pizza boxes. So sometimes those rack-mounted or blades that they throw in, so you'll see a big rack that has just like a whole bunch of servers in, and a lot of times they'll be referred to as pizza boxes.
Yeah, I wish I had a good picture of that.
Although they don't contain pizza.
They do not. Well, they shouldn't. You hope.
That would be bad. Although sometimes they're hot enough to be an oven.
That's true.
But yeah, they do not contain pizza.
And one of the things about power, if we go back to that slide, Case, power supplies, additional fans, yes. I'd already mentioned you may not ever see a power supply that actually looks like this in a server case. You may, in a perfect world, also not see one power supply.
Ever.
In a server case. You should see at least two, hopefully.
Why?
Fault
Why
tolerance,
would you see? There we
which
go.
We're going to talk about. We're going to talk about availability. It goes back to the availability we talked about.
Yes. Yeah. Ports. Ports enable external devices to talk to your system. So they're plugs or sockets of different types that enable peripherals or external devices to connect to your computer.
Mm-hmm. Which in some cases, given our first port, maybe other computers.
Correct. Correct. These could be a printer, a keyboard, mouse, another computer.
Monitor.
A monitor. A variety of scanner.
TV.
TV.
If you want to output some TV to your from your server and watch a movie.
There you go.
It's a good use of server hardware.
There you go. Yeah. People will be pleased.
Hey, it's high performance. You want some good video.
Yeah. Oh, pff, yeah. So here is an example, a graphic of what ports may look like. This is old school because we have the old style mouse and keyboard.
Yeah, the old PS2 connectors.
Hmm? As opposed to, so here, let's see here. Oop. Here you have the old PS2. Here are the new USB. Ethernet here. We have video here. The older style VGA. The new style DIVX?
DVI.
DVI. There we go. Looks like we have onboard, not only onboard Ethernet, but a Ethernet
An additional
card.
Network card, yep.
So, this just illustrates there are a variety of ports to connect a variety of devices.
And there are also, to get another reference, although this one not to Microsoft, there are courses that cover that hardware in great depth that you can find.
Well, and these different ports, just to go a little bit more, some are synchronous, some are asynchronous. It just depends on the port. Different port types had different functionality.
Speeds vary.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a big world.
Okay, so up to this point, we've been talking about physical hardware. So an operating system runs on this and addresses all of this physical hardware. So an operating system will address a network card. It will address the processor. It will address monitor, it will address keyboard and mouse. So it'll address all of those in kind of a one-to-one fashion. Why am I hammering this? I'm hammering this because the next thing we're going to talk about is virtualization. This is a very high-level overview of virtualization.
And when we get into this module, we start talking about, we're going to mention virtualization. All I'm thinking in my head is, we're going to be here for 5 or 6 days talking about virtualization. I'm actually responsible here in Microsoft Learning for our virtualization content for our official courses, and it's days, literally weeks at this point of content on virtualization. So we're going to be as high level as we possibly can and still give you some sort of usable information.
Okay. So if we think about a server running on hardware that addresses it one-to-one, virtualized servers, the hardware is virtualized. So there's not a specific hardware disk or a network card or a VGA card or specific memory that this server is addressing. This is all virtualized and probably virtualized multiple times. So you have like virtual server 1, virtual server 2, virtual server 3, virtual server 4. Then you kind of have a host server that runs around this. The host server is addressing all the hardware directly. And then these virtualized servers are accessing virtualized hardware.
We'll stick with that for now.
Hopefully that's good.
In my brain, I'm like, I want to talk more about virtualization and the different types, but no, we won't go there.
Yeah, yeah.
Not today.
Just know that this right here is a whole area that people specialize in. Like doctors specialize. Some networking professionals specialize in virtualization.
It's a career, if you want it to be.
So now that we've talked about like the physical aspect of the server, the hardware, the software, we've talked about virtualizing the server. Now we need to talk about where are you going to put it, depending on what the requirements of the system is. Does the server go in your mom's basement? Probably not.
Why not?
Although it might.
That's cheap hosting right there.
Yeah, it is cheap hosting. That is cheap hosting. And nicely enough, all those servers keeps mom warm in the winter.
It's not a bad perk.
That's what we call a win-win. Okay.
I have an attic at home that stays very warm in the winter.
So, locating the server. You need to locate the server. So, we've talked about availability. How highly available or what is the uptime for this server? Does it need to be accessible 100% of the time it's managing life support systems? Back to its hosting website, dogs and cats. Again, I have nothing against dogs and cats. I'm just saying maybe that doesn't need to be up as much as life support systems. So you need to locate something or locate the hardware in an appropriate manner. Do you have a dedicated data center? So a data center is an area that contains a whole bunch of servers, typically costs multi-millions of dollars. They have fancy cooling systems. Look up data centers, do a search, a Bing search, for data centers, and you'll see some just really cool. You see, I nailed that.
I did.
You'll see some really cool examples of some data centers that are just amazing.
You can actually do that search for Microsoft data centers. We've got some cool stuff going on.
All the cooling systems.
Well, they're modular now. They're
oh, the pods. Containerized. Yeah, the containerized.
Like a tractor trailer full of servers with its own systems, and they just bring them in and plug them in, and off you go. Capacity increased.
Yep.
It's pretty impressive.
So does that meet your needs? Or maybe you're a small business and having your server in the closet. Maybe that meets your needs.
Yep. Well, and it's funny to me, you'll find these two things are, what's what I'm looking for? Opposite. The higher availability you want for your server, the less accessibility you want for your server.
Correct.
If these are critical systems that need to be functioning for your business to make the massive amounts of money they're making, you probably don't want them to be somewhere that people can get to them very easily.
Correct. You probably don't want your marketing folks having direct access to them to go in and start like banging on keyboards
All this goes back to small business consulting I did years ago where we'd walk into a business and talk to them about their network, and the server was, I mean, if we were lucky, it was actually a server operating system on a computer under the receptionist desk.
Right.
So always a good strategy.
The first strategy I always did in that instance was I always turned it around so they couldn't kick the computer off.
Power button?
Yeah.
That never happens.
Oops. There went the... So software. So we've talked about the operating system. Software contains instructions that the hardware follows.
I feel like we should be good at this topic.
You would think so.
Something tells me.
I certainly hope so.
I managed not to put the name Microsoft anywhere on this slide.
You didn't?
Mm-mm.
Kudos.
Generalization. Software.
Because we're not the only ones who write software.
That's true.
There's another company or two out there.
I've heard that there are some other companies that write software.
Yeah. I've heard through the grapevine that there may be another company or two that writes a software.
It happens.
Yep. So these are basically bundles of instruction sets that do things and stuff.
Mm-hmm. It's a great definition.
I made that up right on
the
fly.
Awesome.
Bundles of software that do things, or bundles of instructions that do things and stuff. Mm-hmm. Typically provides an interface that the user interacts with. So initially, and when we started, the interface was a command prompt. So people had to know strings of commands that you had to type in manually to get the computer to do things. And as computers have evolved, one of the things that have evolved with it are the user interfaces, the graphical user interfaces. So now users can do more powerful things without having to go to the command prompt to do the command foo.
It's funny you talk about that, and I've got a smirk on my face because in my head I'm thinking about server core, I'm thinking about PowerShell, where you say, in the beginning we started with a command prompt, and in my head I'm thinking, and we have returned
to
the command prompt.
Okay, so with the graphical user interface, so we've talked about bottlenecks. We've talked about processor, memory, networking. with that GUI, that graphical user interface, there's overhead. There's processor overhead. There's memory overhead. There's overhead to it. If you don't want that overhead and you have a server that's going to perform a specific role, you can strip that GUI off. That's typically for more advanced users because you need to know what to do at the GUI or at the command prompt. And initially, before computers became as widespread popular as they are today, the problem that people had is they would see a command prompt, that blinking cursor, and would have no idea what to do. There's a decision principle where if you have more than five decisions or five options to decide from, it becomes overwhelming and you get into analysis paralysis. And that was kind of what people were faced with, that blinking cursor, is there were so many things that you could do. I don't know where to start.
There's no guidance.
There's no guidance, exactly. So that GUI really kind of helped take computers to that next level of user interaction. And kind of, in my head, I think that it was the price coming down and a GUI that really kind of made computers available for the masses. So we talked about software, Windows servers. Windows servers have been around for a while. I noticed, you talk about NT, Windows NT. NT, check this out, NT, new technology.
Or network.
Network technology, yes. Released.
There were actually a lot of conversations about that I've been a part of in the past about what did NT stand for. I think Microsoft's official stance was new technology.
Yeah.
I think, I don't remember.
One of them.
It doesn't really make a difference these days.
So NT, 3.5, 3.5.1, 4. And then we are listed here starting with 2000. So Server 2000, 2003, 2003, R2. So notice the cadence here. There's typically a major release and then an R2 release.
Yep.
All the way to currently what we have is 2012, R2.
Yep.
I've worked on, I've been working with remote desktop services since, 2008.
Nice. I've been working at Microsoft since 2012, the OS, not the year. So, I just haven't been here that long.
Well, I've been working with Microsoft longer. I've just been working with RDS since 2008. Yep. So there's servers. Again, servers provide services to clients. And then specifically, as Christopher mentioned earlier, this course is focused on 2008 R2. The editions here are listed. They're different editions that have different functionalities. Kind of how much is available in that OS?
Yeah. And for 2012, I'm pulling this up real quick just so I can make sure I don't give anybody the wrong information. If you go back to that list for 2008, it's a long list of editions. Foundation, Standard, Enterprise, Data Center. It's a long list. You've got Web Server. You've got Itanium-based, which is its own little world. There are still multiple different versions or editions of 2012 R2. We've got Foundation. We've got Standard. We've got Enterprise. We've got Essentials and Data Center. There is no Enterprise. There's actually between Foundation and Standard is Essentials. There's also a Hyper-V server. 2012 R2.
Oh, right.
There's also a storage server, 2012 R2, which there was a storage server 2008 as well. It's just not on that slide. And those, they're obscure enough. You're not going to usually have to worry about them. Hyper-V server. I don't know anybody who's actually running Hyper-V server. They're running server, standard, or data center with the Hyper-V functionality. But they do exist. So this list that you see in front of you will be accurate enough if you substitute in 2012, 2012 R2 to get you through what you need to get through for this course.
And one thing to note about 2008 R2 is that's when they went to a 64-bit only server system. Before, with 2008, you could get a 32-bit version or a 64-bit version. With 2008 R2, they said no, 64-bit version only.
And 2012 has remained 64-bit only forever.
Correct. So server roles. A server can provide services. The roles define what services a server can provide. File and print, web services, that kind of list that we went back to. So server roles are what you would install, or role services are what you would install to add additional functionality to the server.
Yep.
Full installation in server core. So Christopher talked a little bit about server core already. The full installation includes GUI, supports all available server roles. Server core is a minimal environment, no GUI, no Windows Explorer shell, and only supports certain roles. So something to note, if you are interested in server core, ensure that it supports the roles that you want to provide, the services you want to provide, be sure that you can install those.
Yep, that's a very good piece of advice. I've seen that happen. I want to run server core. Oh, it doesn't actually run the software I needed to run, so.
And then you have a SAD.
You do, someone does.
Yep. Server requirements. So these are the minimum server requirements to get your server to run at all.
Just to get it to install.
Yes, yeah. If you want it to do things and stuff, you probably want more than
probably,
this.
Probably, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Processor, yeah, memory, definitely. 512 megs of RAM is not gonna get you much.
No.
It will run.
It'll run. Well, and you could do some basic things. You could host a website. You could do file and print services.
Well, I wanna jump back if we can, two slides.
Two slides?
Do we have demos coming up? I don't know if I have demos coming up.
I believe we have demos.
Okay, good. We'll wait for the demos because I want to show some things off.
Okay. Clean installation. So there are multiple methods of install. You can do an upgrade. You can do a clean installation. A clean installation says, hey, I'm going to install a fresh version of Windows, either client or server. This is appropriate to either role. Personally, I try to do clean installations whenever I do installs. That's just my personal.
I'm just gonna sit here and smirk. I upgrade a lot.
Do you really?
I do. I have a domain controller at my house that's been upgraded from 2000 all the way up to 2012 R2 at this point.
Yeah.
Like I installed it as a 2000 server in 2000, and it has been the same. It's been virtualized. I physical to virtualed it a long time ago, and have just same exact machine has just been upgraded every time a new one comes out.
You're a bold man.
I like those moves. I like seeing if it works. It's gone all right so far.
Well, and there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, that's a perfectly decent process to take.
For my house.
Yes, yeah.
Probably not going to encourage Microsoft to do that or any other large enterprises.
Correct.
Probably have different methods, better methods.
So clean installation, installing from scratch. Or if you already have it installed, you're installing into a new directory, you're not migrating anything. Although nowadays you can do a clean install and then migrate user data and content over later.
Yeah,
that's a different topic.
Yeah.
But I don't want users to think that, hey, if I perform a clean install, I've lost everything. Because that's not the case. Or it doesn't have to be the case.
I was going to say there's some trickiness in that, because if you do a clean install...
Wipe the drive.
Exactly. As part of the install process, you manage your storage, and if you happen to, as part of that process, format the disk that your data was on and then do a clean install, you may actually lose some data.
Correct.
It's possible.
So be careful.
Yes.
Performing an upgrade, as Christopher mentioned, you can take your existing server and upgrade it to a new operating system. The one that you can't do is you can't do 32-bit to 64-bit. That is a problem. Disk cloning. So you're copying the contents of your hard drive onto another disk or into another area, another disk or image file. It's a sector-by-sector copy of the drive.
Yeah, it's not like a file copy. It's not like grab that C drive and copy it to the drive you just installed and you could run it. It's a little bit different than that.
Enables you to create customized Windows images to be reused on other systems.
And we're going to talk about that a lot later on.
Windows Server 2008 R2 can be installed using disk cloning. We'll talk about that. And disk cloning creates an exact copy of an OS installation, which can be a problem. Because if you're performing an exact copy, you're copying over, and you may not think about this off the top of your head, but you're copying over the name. You're copying over the IP address. You're copying over the serial number, the activation codes. So I have one server up. Its name is Fred. I've just named it Fred off the top of my head here. I disclone, and I bring up another server whose name is Fred.
Now named Fred.
Yes. So now you have two servers. There's going to be a little bit of an issue.
So luckily, Microsoft, we like to think we're kind of paying attention.
We do.
So
we've
come up with some ways to circumvent that, to make sure you don't end up with that problem in the discloning process.
Yes, and which rolls us into the next slide, sysprep.
Ta-da!
Sysprep. Look at, you would think that we had done this before.
It's like we've written this kind of content and trained in the past.
It does seem that way.
Which is good. I want it to seem that way.
Yes. So sysprep enables you to generalize the system. So it removes the name, it removes the IP address, it removes some of the information unique to a computer that would cause conflicts if another computer saw it.
Yep. So you do this before you create that image that you're then going to put on 100 hard drives or 100 actual computers.
Correct. So before you disclone, you create the disk image the way you want it, install whatever applications, install the appropriate role services. You get it set, you get it working, then you sysprep it. Then you create that generalized image that can be rolled out.
And note, he uses sysprep as a verb, which we do these days. Sysprep is an action. It's not just a tool. I've heard people say, you run sysprep. I'm like, no, you sysprep it.
You just sysprep it.
It's a verb.
I verbized it. I don't know if that's a word.
This is going to happen more and more.
Verbized verb. I made verb a verb.
Nice.
It removes system-specific data from Windows, configures Windows to boot to audit mode, configures Windows to boot to Windows Welcome. So as the system comes up, it takes you back to that, hey, I need information. I need time zone. I need name. I need whatever it is that you want to configure, which, if you're doing multiple systems, could be a problem, which we have overcome with unattended installations. Look at us. Look at how we're rolling one topic to another.
Crazy.
Seamless. Unattended installation. This enables you to create a file to answer these types of questions.
Mm-hmm. So you can create that one image, create 100 answer files, unattended installation answer files, and do those installs without having to do anything.
Correct.
It's awesome.
Server image manager.
So it's not often that we have screenshots in here. We try and avoid screenshots because we like to do demos. This tool is a part of an add-on called the Windows AIK. And that initialism has actually changed from 08 to 2012. So I'm not sure which one I want to use. But as part of that, it was the automated installation kit. As part of that, you get this tool that you can use to build answer files. This is chock full of thousands of settings you can pre-configure in an answer file for unattended installations. And that's what this tool is for.
Well, so we went back to, initially there was a command prompt, and now there's a GUI to perform. So that's kind of the advancement, is going from the manual creation of things to having a nice GUI to help you work with these types of systems.
Well, it's funny, in this case, is you'll use the GUI to create the answer file and then the command line to use the answer file when you do the installation of Windows on a machine.
Correct.
Maybe.
Windows deployment services for network-based installations.
Mm-hmm. So once I've created this image, we put it on a server.
So what would be some benefits?
Well, and when I say put it on a server, I don't mean install a server with it. I mean, we have this file that's an image, and we put it on a server that provides a service to install operating systems.
Correct. So I might use a system like Pixieboot, PXE boot. So
networking course. I mean, you probably can't hear me doing that with the mic. Networking course.
Real quick, it enables you, as you boot up, you can boot from the network, select a file, it will download that image on your system.
Yep, you're telling your computer to install itself from another computer on your network.
Windows Imaging Format File, the WIM file. So this is how those installation files can be distributed within these WIM files.
Yep. And in fact, I'm going to do a couple things all at once. I'm going to take over some demo time here.
We actually, it is demo time.
Is it demo time? Which one are we up to?
It is the WIM file.
Okay, so I'm going to go back a little bit because I missed some demos I wanted to do earlier. So we're going to look at two different versions. I'm going to start right here. This is 2008 R2 Server Manager. This is one of the things we talked about earlier. We were talking about management tools.
Correct.
That's all I want to show you. You see this. It's got some information on it. We'll come back to that. I also want to show everybody this. We talked about Server Core. Now I can cover a couple things at once here. I'm running Server Core on a server, and this is all there is to it. If I scroll this down, because there's a scroll bar, there is no start button, there is no task bar, there's no clock, there's nothing. There's just a command line, which is why I was giggling when you said we started with the command line, and now we've got GUIs.
Now we're back to the command line.
Now we have a command line. This is Server Core, and the second thing I'm actually demonstrating is this is a virtual machine.
Oh.
So I'm running a server that we're looking at. That server is running Hyper-V, which is Microsoft's virtualization software. And I'm running this virtual machine on Hyper-V. So I'm demoing all sorts of things at once, as many as I can. Now we're going to close this. Actually, you know what? Let's see. What do I want to do next? Not on that computer. Minimize that. And that. Backslash. You get to see my little quote there.
Adapt or die.
It's a good quote. This is old, but it will at least do the trick. So I'm going to mount this ISO. So we talked about WIMs and how they're the files we use to deploy images that we create of operating systems. Something a lot of people may or may not be aware of, and if you're new to IT, you won't know this. Windows actually is, where is it? No, it's in here. It's in sources. Ugh. I have to find the file. Right there.
Oh, look at that.
Windows, as it comes, whether it's client or server, is a WIM. You're actually getting an image file as your install media for Windows these days. This started back in 2008 or 08 R2. I don't remember which one. But all Windows installations are a WIM image file. I could pull this file directly off of this media, put it into WDS, and use it to deploy Windows to my entire network. Right off my original, the disk that came with the OS. So, that's about it for now. I was going to do it. I really, really, really wanted to do a WinSim, a Windows Image Manager demo, but it's part of the AIK that I didn't download and install, and it's not a cumbersome process, but it was more than I had time to prepare for, so.
Fair enough. So after WIM file, after a server gets installed, you need to license the functionality. You need to license or activate the server. So once you purchase software from a company, you need to license or enable your usage of that software.
I will give one piece of advice for licensing. If you're in IT, if you're working in technology, if you're new to technology, find someone else to do it. That's my two cents. Don't license. Get someone else in your organization to worry about licensing. Someone in procurement, someone in purchasing, someone in, I don't know, something.
It can be quite cumbersome.
It's a little confusing
to track
sometimes. Yeah.
All of this. You were talking in networking fundamentals how you used to have a spreadsheet that you tracked licenses for.
I've had spreadsheets
companies
to track IP addresses at some point in my career.
Ugh.
Yeah.
So nowadays there's management software that will help you with this, but it's still a pretty in-depth accounting-oriented process to ensure that things are properly licensed.
Your vendor, whoever you're working with for your licenses, should be able to help with that as well, whether it's Microsoft or someone else. So it is a tricky process.
Activation, so Windows activation. So after you have Windows licensed, you can go online, put your product key in, and activate your Windows copy.
We'll stick with that for now.
Yep. Activating Windows ensures that you work with Windows updates. So all the new updates that roll out, your system brings those down. So as issues are found, security issues are found, increased functionality, is rolled out, these can be rolled out using Windows updates.
Yep.
And amazingly enough, we have a demo for Windows updates.
So, and this one I'm going to keep pretty simple. I'm going to hit the Windows button. Windows update. This is my demo. Ta-da! There it is.
Yeah, and you can configure this to automatically download updates, to only create updates when you say so. Yep.
So here are the settings that I can change. Now, I'm giving you a demo of what's on a local machine. And this is the same for a server. I can go onto a server, I can open a Windows update, I can see these settings. In an enterprise environment, even in a small business environment, hopefully you're not doing this. Hopefully you're using some sort of centralized Windows update management to do that. Windows software update services, or is it Windows server update services now?
For a while it was WSUS.
It still is. It's WSUS. I just don't know if it's Windows server or Windows software update services.
Okay.
WSUS is one option. Configuration Manager is another option that will help you centralize and centrally manage updates. This is all I'm going to show you for here because it's the server admin course. This is all we're going to cover in the exam, and that's all you have to worry about.
There's one thing to think about is, as you roll out updates, the environment you work in is unique to everybody else's environment. You have software specific to your environment. There may be an update that maybe closes a port, secures some software that does something that your environment doesn't like.
That will break in your environment.
Yes. Yeah, that could cause issues. So the one thing that you want to do is ensure that you've tested updates before you roll them out. Additional resources and next steps.
Well, there's a lot of them, as you can see. We didn't mess around at all with this one. Books. The 365 MTA Windows Server Administration Fundamentals, there is a book you can get. There's an exam that we're all here to study for, 98-365 Windows Server Administration Fundamentals. And in the middle, instructor-led courses. As I had mentioned in the beginning, part of what I do here at Microsoft, in addition to these MVA courses, which are terrific, is plan, design, manage, build our actual instructor-led courses, our Microsoft official courseware. So that's what these are. You can go sit in a room for a couple of days with an instructor and a bunch of your peers who are in the same place you are, hopefully, in their careers, and learn all of these things hands-on.
And then finally, for module one, sadly, the end.
The end.
The end.
We have a closing slide. He's not even showing our little closing slide.
Well, yeah, it's nice. It's
doesn't
blue.
It have a disclaimer on it? Is it something I need to...
Well, it has a logo on it. There's a nice little logo on it.
Eh.
But the end.
Yeah, that's all we got. So we'll be back for the next module.
Come back. Be sure and there's more knowledge to be had.
There is. You're in MVA, so just one step down. There's a module two.
Yep. Click it. Do it. We'll see you soon.